Ladies and gentlemen, I have a grave announcement to make. Incredible as it may seem, both the observations of science and the evidence of our eyes lead to the inescapable assumption that those strange beings who landed in the Jersey farmlands tonight are the vanguard of an invading army from the planet Mars.
These are some of the most famous words ever broadcast over the radio. You're hearing a bit from the live broadcast of The War of the Worlds from the Mercury Theater of the Air. The show is a brilliant adaptation of the novel written by H.G. Wells more than 40 years earlier. The broadcast is from October 30th, 1938. Yes, The War of the Worlds radio broadcast is 85 years old. It's still one of the best known yet most misunderstood broadcasts. And it is still used and abused, in my view, in media studies courses all over the world. The lessons of War of the Worlds still hold today. I'm Paul Cross. This is Cross Talk, Media History, Commentary, and Analysis, Season 8, Episode 2. I can't tell you where and when I first heard of the War of the Worlds radio drama, or when I first listened. I don't remember not knowing about it. Of course, it came up in my studies in college broadcasting and in an undergrad media studies course, and then again during my master's degree studies through a university in the UK. By then, what academics and writers were telling me about the broadcast had for me a distinct anti-radio bias. To my mind, the Mercury Theater has created an absolutely outstanding radio drama. The writing, the acting, the sound effects, the transitions, the drama are all remarkable achievements. But I've been told for way too many years that the broadcast was irresponsible, harmful, that it caused mass panic, that it tried to trick listeners into thinking it was genuine news reporting. I have catalogued and elaborated upon my arguments about this misrepresentation of the broadcast in 5 previous episodes in earlier seasons. The links are in the description data on the page for this episode. For today, a few brief points. First, to anyone who did tune in from the start of the show, it's very clear they were about to hear fiction.
The Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations present Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater on the Air in The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells.
But many listeners missed the opening of the show. Why? Well, many were listening to a more established show on a rival network, NBC. The Chase and Sanborn Hour, starring Edgar Bergen and his puppet Charlie McCarthy, had a guest that evening. Actor Dorothy L'Amour, who sang a song. Somewhere around 15 minutes into the show, many listeners chose to tune out, to turn the dial away from the singing, and found themselves tuning in on CBS at about this moment.
Oh, yeah, I can see the thing's body now. It's large, and large as a bear. It glistens like wet leather, but that face, ladies and gentlemen, it's indescribable. I can hardly force myself to keep looking at it. It strikes him head on. Lord, they're turning into flames. He is caught up by the woods, the bars, the gas tanks of the automobiles spreading everywhere. Coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
You can imagine how that might have sounded to a listener not prepared for it. But it was listed in the radio program listings and ads in the newspaper that weekend, and there were still many other audio clues that it is fiction. Still, some listeners reacted strongly. And so did the newspapers, of course. Legacy media is always upset and threatened by new media. It's 1938. Radio is gaining listeners and advertising revenue as CBS and others ramp up their news reporting on the growing crisis in Europe. How does a newspaper compete with the live broadcast? It served the interests of the newspaper industry to discredit radio, to portray it as irresponsible. You know, in the 8 articles in the Toronto Star in the 3 days following the broadcast, there's no indication whatsoever that the newspaper ever asked the Toronto radio station that carried the show for any kind of comment. And what about the suggestion War of the Worlds caused a wave of mass hysteria? That's the term, front page headline in the New York Times. It's an exaggeration. Here's what researcher Hadley Cantrill of the Princeton Radio Project says on reflection in an edition from 1966 of his original report from 1940.
On Halloween night in 1938, Orson Welles at his Mercury Theater on the Air dramatized H.G. Wells' fantasy War of the Worlds so realistically realistically and effectively that at least a million Americans became frightened and thousands were panic-stricken.
There's more on my concerns about the flawed research and Cantrill's preconception of investigating panic as established fact in earlier episodes. We know now people who did think some kind of invasion was actually happening typically did nothing to find out, such as checking other radio stations or calling one or looking up the listings. They lacked media literacy and critical listening skills. And what was the moment in the NBC show that drove so many listeners to reach for the dial and turn over to the CBS show in progress? Listen, it's somewhere around this.
Look at you and look at me, just two wilted flowers. We should get a cuckoo clock for this house of ours.
Like, don't like, short attention span, instant gratification, bubble, combined with old media fear of new media, war of the worlds is a perfect storm. Every time I hit play, I find something else to examine. We are 85 years on, and the war of the worlds keeps on giving. This is Crosstalk. I'm Paul Cross. I study and I teach podcasting and radio.